Hello, you're listening to Life Autistic. This is Jay Nemro, and this is episode number 721. Well, blissfully, it is now after the first Tuesday in November of 2008. Blissfully, the election is over. Now we're not going to hear from Barack Obama ever again. Because now he's president. He's not trying to make us feel better. Now he's going to go about the business of learning how to govern. And probably going to do an interesting job of it at the very least. Thank goodness. Well, I don't know. We were having a discussion about the whole circumstance. I find it interesting. I don't know the political bent, although I'm pretty free with mine. I don't know the political bent of everybody at work. You know, if you were to go by what was pretty standard for this area, which is kind of difficult to do because the people I work with aren't predominantly from this area particularly. One of them actually is, but he's probably the one that doesn't go by the political bent, you know. This place seems to go kind of conservative, you know, even though, and what can I say? I'm not a conservative. I am a libertarian. I'm not trying to conserve anything. I want to get rid of all that stuff. There's no conservation coming from me. Oof. Anyway, so it was an interesting conversation everybody was having because I have kind of a political bent that says, you know what, things aren't going to change appreciably. Says, you know, it really doesn't matter who's in the White House. What matters is how people are. Now, that's a tricky subject. You know, when 9/11 came, we just ran to fascism as hard as we could. And, you know, I don't know if the president liked that or not. All I know is his political need was to do that. He needed people around him who could do that. And, boy, let me tell you, I think they did a pretty decent job. Good start. We've got a good start on the kind of police state that, you know, that any Hitler would be very, very excited to be the head of. I don't know if Barack Obama is much of a socialist. He certainly has the background of someone who is a community action person, who was a lawyer who fought for the rights of the little guy, you know, almost something of kind of a humble savior sort of a figure. But honestly, now, we're having a big pullback because of the war, and I don't mean a military pullback, I mean the people of the United States moving as cows, moving as sheep, as they so often do. As an interesting aside, when I started all these recordings nearly 5 years ago, long before the podcast ever started, I just had recordings, period. I didn't put them into podcasts. I start out calling people cows. You know, I would always start out that way. Hello, cows, or I call them happy slaves, one or the other. You know, and that was under a circumstance where we where we looked much more like we were maybe getting to a little more deregulation, a little more freedom. But, you know, still had people that were basically cows. Whatever they were told, they would do, and they would believe, and they would put their whole stock in it. Whether it was Rush Limbaugh or Bill Clinton or anybody else, you know, everybody seemed to be looking for some savior. And that's the sad, depressing part. Barack Obama didn't win because Barack Obama is wonderful. It's just because Barack Obama was different from George W. Bush. No Republican was going to win. That was just the way it was. You didn't see the good candidates, the good presidential candidates, even running this year on the Republican side. Because, you know, I'm sorry. George W. Bush is a huge liability. His vice president wouldn't even run. He wouldn't even run. Probably because he was, number one, unelectable. You know, wasn't going to make it. But, yeah, anybody who did have chances, they weren't holding out for this one. John McCain became the nominee just by default because nobody else was willing to do it. It would have been wonderful if Ron Paul would have won the nomination. Now, that would have been a heck of a race. That would have been a heck of a race. Still would have lost. I'm still saying that we would have lost because, I'm sorry, when you look at the numbers, the people who really want liberty are microscopic. You know, you can count them, you know, they're in the thousands, not in the millions. And there's 300 million people in the United States. So, just ponder those numbers for a minute. What this country was is gone. What this country was founded on has nothing to do with what the country wants to do now. And that's why, you know, every once in a while I've said, yeah, maybe we should just separate. Maybe we should just break into pieces. But you know what? The Liberty people wouldn't get a piece either. There would be the fascists in one corner, you know, fascist states of America. And then there would be the socialist states of America, kind of the new USSR. And that would basically be kind of that would basically be it. There wouldn't be anything else. Anyway, so, what can I say? you know, and liberty still wouldn't have a place because so few people really desire freedom. You know, as the world gets more difficult to deal with, we flee to security. Unfortunately, we flee to people. We don't turn to God and ask God for security. That's too nebulous. That, you know, we prefer almost demigod figures. Oh, I was listening yesterday, just for a few minutes, coming home from work, to NPR, which is somewhat of a liberal, slanting news organization. And, boy, let me tell you, it was a whole string of black people just talking about, and they did this on purpose, you know, they aren't going to ask white people what they think about Obama, because they know that's not going to be interesting. They wanted to ask black people what they thought of Obama. And, boy, let me tell you, oh, my gosh, there was one day, we're finally free, and you're going, whoa, you know, I've never been so happy since the Emancipation Proclamation. Which she wasn't there for. And it's like, what? It's like the civil rights movement didn't, you know, she forgot about how they got here. Black man's president, the world is wonderful now. And you go, you know what? And I was saying this to Lisa. I said, you know what you're going to find out? You're going to find out what Africa found out. For the longest time, when Africa was kind of ruled over by colonial powers, England, France, some Portugal, German, Dutch, you know, the whole big fight was to destroy, was to get the colonialists out. Then everything would get better, right? You know, all the little Africans would join hands and sing Kumbaya, and everything would just be wonderful. You know? But what you found out was, as soon as the colonials left, things didn't get better. In fact, to a certain degree, they got worse. But now you couldn't blame a white guy for it. It was some evil, wicked, nasty, tyrannical black guy. Somebody that you probably fought side by side with, you just didn't know that he had his own plans that didn't involve singing Kumbaya, that didn't involve any of that. Well, Africa has since learned that things didn't get any better. Trading one tyrant for another doesn't make things better. Tyrants aren't just white guys, big old white guys who don't care about you. Tyrants are also, you know, dark-skinned, evil warlords who want to oppress you just as much as Whitey ever did. The only problem is, well, the black people here just didn't understand that. They figured that it was always the white man crapping on them, and it's like, you know what? How are you going to feel when you got a black man crapping on you? I know it's going to happen first, or I'm guessing, and I won't be surprised when I finally see it, is that they're first going to say, well, he's not an effect black man. Even though they shouted it from the hilltops right now, oh boy, we got a black man in the office! As soon as he turns on them, and he will, because, you know, if he's going to be a tyrant, and that's what it really takes to be an American president, to be a tyrant, that's what you're forced into, trust me. If he's trying not to be a tyrant, he's either going to be convinced or he's going to be railroaded by other people in his administration that basically will be a tyrant for him. The black people here are going to start saying, oh no, he's not black. Look, his mom was white. That's the problem. He has white in his genes. You know, it's going to be, you know, if you thought that race was now no longer an issue because you have a black president, holy moly, because he's not going to be black enough, you know. Oh, pretty boy up there, he's been doing whatever, you know. I don't know how it's going to ultimately go, but I can just say that unanimity came from black people feeling like they were oppressed won't hold together, because it never does. You know, unity by common suffering never holds anything together. Because if the suffering by chance ends, then the unity falls apart too. People start looking out for number one. You know, although it looks good on paper, oh, the blacks are so unified, they go, only because they thought they were going to get something from this guy. And when it comes down to it, how much can a president really do? The president can only do a whole lot when everybody's scared, when there's a crisis perceived. That's why a lot of crises get created, doctored. Stuff like that. It's because that nets power, not just to the president, but to government too. It helps government. If we're perceived to having a huge problem, you know, people start running to government to try to solve it. It's always foolish, because the first thing government will do is they will enslave you. You must do it this way, this is the way it's going to be, and if you try doing anything else, we're going to lock you up in jail. And you go, wait a minute, this is supposed to make my life better, all of a sudden my life is worse. And you go, hello, where have you been? That's what government does. Government does what it does by force. It doesn't do what it does because it's nice and sweet and gentle and loves to cuddle. You know, government's all about rewarding your friends and punishing your enemies. Did I talk about this? Nobody listening out there? Anyway, so. Government wants to get bigger. That's its nature. That's the nature of any institution. It wants to get bigger. It wants to grow. It wants to get larger, because a larger, bigger institution gets more power. That's why all governments lean toward empire. All governments lean toward empire. Any chance they can get. Whether they're just imperial over a group of people, in like a town, you know, your town government wants to be imperial over that town. It wants to say what you can do and what you can't do, because that's how it gets power. It doesn't get power by saying, well, you can do whatever you want and we're not going to worry about it. That's not taking, you know, that's not power. That's what people get into government for. You know, and those who get into government get to share in that power. Well, I get to be more powerful. Woo-hoo! Oh, boy! You know, I don't have much of a political career, if I would even begin to try, for the simple reason that I would be tearing things down. That would be the most interesting thing for me to do, is to tear down the government. Get rid of it. You know? But that's not going to happen, right? You know, because, you know, nobody wants that. People have found out that they can get power by allying with one of the parties. You know, oh boy, we're going to, you know, it's almost like a crapshoot. If my big people win, maybe they'll let a little bit of their stuff trickle down to me. That's what happened just here last day or so ago. If I put if I'm a poor person, I don't feel like things are right because I don't have a nice, you know, cushy job that I don't have to do anything for, or I can't sit in my welfare house and eat bonbons while I'm watching Oprah. You know, if I agree to vote for a Democrat is more likely to just be throwing free money at me. You know, the Democrats have signed on long ago to the whole thing of you confiscate from the rich and you make social programs that take care of the poor. And you don't get weird about it, because what you're doing is you're buying votes. It's a very simple feedback loop, because poor people are more sheep-like or more cow-like than almost anybody else. You know, the more beholden somebody becomes to government, the more amenable they are to being controlled by government. You know, you can predict what they're going to do. If there's nothing that a Democrat that likes more than anything else, of course, Republicans don't mind it either, but, you know, they have a different constituency group to work with. They tend to work with middle and upper class people, and, you know, and you have to bribe them. Republicans bribe, Democrats enslave. You know, that's pretty much how that whole system kind of works, I guess. Anyway, so that's kind of what happened, you know. Here's this deal. Here's what we're going to do. What's this guy up to? He just pulled over so he wouldn't get run over by cars? He's going to get run over by cars. It's a little bitty country road. Anyway. Oh, well, you know, I don't want to talk about politics anymore. The whole point was, you can't, you know, unless there's something huge going on, of course, there's going to always be an impetus to either try to create something huge, or if you do have something, make it as huge as you can because of the power grab. You know, otherwise, the bureaucracy just continues on the way it always has. Now, George W. Bush took the impetus of 9/11 and shifted the whole bureaucracy kind of to a Homeland Security kind of posture. I think since there hasn't been another attack, and let me tell you, if I was a politician, I would be staging another terrorist attack. I really would be. And, of course, when I say staging another terrorist attack, that's what I think happened the first time. Now, I don't know who staged it. You know, you say, well, it was those guys over, yeah, it was Osama bin Laden. You go, Osama bin Laden is paid off. He is paid off. Have you noticed that we haven't caught him yet? You want to know why we haven't caught him yet? Because he is a guy that has the means and the ability and the street cred to pull off these kinds of things that we really need, that certain groups really need to make this stuff happen. You know, if you go, oh, no, he's one of those 9/11 truther crazies. And you go, I'm sorry, I've read their stuff, and it makes, frankly, more sense than what I'm hearing from government. Their justifications, their excuses are pathetic. It goes to the whole thing of, when people try to explain why 9/11 happened, it sounds like the same kind of thought process that was used to get us into the Iraq War. One gets accepted readily, probably because because all the political parties have found ways to benefit from 9/11. The Republicans loved it because it gave them, you know, it gave hawks the wonderful ability to go out and do hockey things, and it was an amazing way to shift toward a fascist state. Unfortunately, you have to understand that people won't tolerate fascism too long unless, you know, it's just that's the problem with fascism. It's not sustainable long term. You have to have a constant enemy. You know, you have to constantly keep people weird about the enemy. If you've ever read the book 1984, that's how they kept kind of their socialistic fascism going, was because they kept a perpetual war on. You know, your alliances may change, but the other things wouldn't. Anyway, so sorry, I just had to check my email there for a second. So, you know, you had to keep the war going. The problem is, when people aren't interested in staying in the war, we're becoming weary of war, which is good. I think that's a good thing. I think a lot of good will come out of the fact that we don't care about war anymore. Socialism isn't one of those things, but I think I'd prefer socialism over fascism. I know that sounds bad. Oh my gosh, what's he saying? What's he saying? It's true. the Republicans got in bed long ago with the military-industrial complex. It works really good for the kind of economy we've set up for ourselves. Therefore, they have a big incentive to go to war. All their friends made their money off of war. Munitions, stuff like that. So yeah, if they can come up with any kind of excuse to go to war, they're going to take it. But yeah, you can't sustain it. Because the people don't want war particularly. You know, we are the kind of people that only really want to go to war when we're attacked. 9/11 was kind of a pathetic, made-up attack. And they wanted to do something with it. Going, what can we do with this? We got to turn this into something good. It's like, okay, so we had to start a war. We had to invade some country. The country didn't really have much to do with what was going on, except that most of the people in the country were the same religion. It was kind of silly. You know, they had the same skin color. Many of them spoke a similar language. And that's it. That was the only connection, really. There's weapons of mass. He could kill us. He could come after us. You go, but he isn't. Under that kind of doctrine, we should go after the Russians. Why? Because they could kill us. Oh, no, we want to have peace with the Russians. Why? Because they can kick your butt. That's why. You don't want to have a war with them. You go, maybe we should have that attitude toward everybody. So, yeah, and when it comes down to it, I prefer socialism over fascism. We were running headlong into fascism. Hopefully the socialists, hopefully Barack Obama, now I'm not saying he's a socialist, but I think he leans that way more than the other way, which I think is fine. I think if we can figure out a way to extract ourselves from the Middle East and just leave it to themselves and just trade with them, not try to dominate them. After the British Empire fell, there was an American Empire. Now, we didn't conquer and hold particularly. We're starting to do it now. Iraq is conquered and held, you know. We look just like the British Empire right now. And it's all for their riches, for their oil. Let's get serious, silly people. You lost your mind. That's the only reason why we went into there was for the oil. Get real. Anyway, if we can extract ourselves from that, I'm sure that will cool down the whole situation over there. You know, Iran will say, we hate Americans, Americans suck, boo America, and you go, you know what, who cares? Who cares what they think of us? You know, they can't lob a bomb 60 miles. Get out of there. Let Israel do what Israel wants to do. Quit trying to restrain Israel. Say, you know what, Israel? You're free. We're going to cut you loose, honestly. You know, if people in America want to support Israel, they can do it out of their pocket. Our government isn't going to do it anymore. And we're going to set those guys loose. And, you know, oh, there'll be a huge, horrible war. And you go, so? It's a huge, horrible war now! It's just quieter. Just quieter. You don't hear the body counts every day anymore. Just as well. Anyway, so. I prefer socialism only because sometimes socialism actually works in the favor of individuals. It doesn't give them freedom. It still tries to buy individuals off. But, you know, at least individuals have some say. In fascism, individuals don't. You know? Fascism doesn't care about individuals. You know, it cares about the nation, the country. You can smell it sometimes in some of the rhetoric that comes out of, you know, Washington. I was saddened by John McCain's statement upon his losing the presidency that we need to come together. When you go, that's a Republican statement, and they keep saying that just because they want people to come together, and, you know, they're a lot about nationalism. Fascists are big on nationalism, you know. The Nazis were all about Greater Germany, you know, and how everybody needed to sacrifice and do whatever it took to make Germany great, let Germany dominate, and people would go into slavery cheering, yay, yay, yay. So, and I am not a nationalist at all. I can give or take America. I will do what I'm asked to do, you know. Next one I'm going to do is going to talk about what I would tell Barack Obama as a first thing. I would write it up and put it in a letter, but I know he'd never read it. I put it on his podcast, but I know he'd never read it. Because he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to listen to individual people. He doesn't have to seek guidance. He already knows what he wants. He's going to do it. He's going to try. Or the people around him know what they want. There's only a certain number of people that can even get close enough to the guy to even talk to him, much less affect his thinking. It would be interesting. It would be interesting to see. It would be interesting to know what might happen. Anyway, so, I think I've said enough on all these subjects that I would like. Yeah. Because at least under socialism, they're trying to curry your favor, which means that you might get some of the things that you want out of it. Of course, when there's 300 million people you're trying to curry their favor, it tends to go for whatever cows would want. You know, more grass, more, you know, less crap about dumping, you know, about pooping on things. You don't want to hear about those problems. Anyway. You know, it doesn't work in my favor because I'm not a group person. So therefore, socialism doesn't help me because socialism is all about the mass of people and doing what the mass of people want, trying to give them all the luxuries that you want. Anyway, but yeah, maybe out of that I'll eke out something. Anyway, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This has been episode number 721, I think. Let me take a look and make sure. Yeah, 721. If you want to contact me, the email address is autism, A-U-T-I-S-M, @quix.us. Have a great day.